Digital 410 proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Don Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Henry Sledge.
What's up? What's up? What's up? Welcome to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, the Music Bed is Extremely Way Too Loud podcast. As always here at the Digital 410 Media, we're always constantly making adjustments to increase your audible experience. Speaking of audible experience, you hear his voice in your sleep. It's the warm sounding tones of Mr. Henry Sledge. Henry, how you doing today, sir?
Hopefully enhancing the audible experience of our listeners.
And as always, bringing the best experience possible, whether it's through audible or visual, museums or plastic airplanes hanging from your kid's ceiling, Mr. Jeff Copsetta. Jeff, how you doing tonight, sir?
That's a whole lot better of an intro. I appreciate that.
A whole lot better than the outro from... No, actually, no, never mind. I was thinking about when I forgot to mention my brother on the other podcast. He got mad. We're doing the outro, and I was so burned. I went over him. But anyhow, how are you guys doing? It's been a long day.
Yeah, I feel like I've done this before today.
Ooh, is this your first time laying down two episodes in a day?
I think it is.
Well, with us, or I mean, in general? I mean, have you done other podcasts two at a time?
No, never done that, no.
Yeah, well, see, you're moving up in the world. Jeff, how you been? How are things in Texas?
Well, I'd say they were hot, but it changed, so they're cold. But it's going to be hot again tomorrow. It's Texas in March.
I feel you. I've actually had my windows and doors open for the last 2 days. Like, oh, I can save money in AC. It was sweatshirt and hoodie and sock hat weather this morning. It was like 52 when I got up this morning. I was
like, oh, yeah. Cold. Sick of cold weather.
When's the last time you had a good warm snap up there, Henry?
Week before last.
Yeah. Just getting to sound like
it was awesome.
Awesome. I'm tired of the heat. I enjoy cool weather.
I mean, last week, my son, it got cold again last week. Jack had a track meet, a mountain bike race, and then mountain bike practice yesterday. Froze my ass off.
Well, you know, and that's the thing that sucks nowadays with kids and sports. When we were kids, it was one baseball game. Your parents were out 2 hours on a Saturday, and that was it. Now, like, if you have kids playing volleyball, basketball, yeah, soccer, whatever, it's an all-day thing.
And Jeff, he had two mountain bike races last week.
And I know so. Jeff's kids are getting to that age, too, where they've probably been playing organized sports where he's like, well, Saturday's gone, 4 hours with soccer and baseball.
I mean, it's a blessing, you know, as I'm sure Jeff would agree. But
But as the parent who works 6 days a week, I just want my Saturday off. Lose the game. Yeah, lose the game. That, so we can go home. So what's going on, Jeff? Give us an update on your world. I know you got a lot to talk about. We pulled your cord. We're going to let you take off like the Energizer Bunny of old. Not the computer version, but the old analog stuffed animal that they used to put on TV back when I was a kid.
Yeah, I got to make up for some lost ground. The listeners know I can't always be here, and it just kills me. And I have conversations with Henry about that. Like, man, y'all have a great one. I won't be there. Miss some amazing guests that y'all have on. And but I appreciate y'all, you know, working with me through that, because, yeah, I do have a lot going on. But I will catch y'all up. I've got some really cool things to share. I was telling a few folks earlier today, like, oh, man, you having an episode tonight? Like, yes, but you may want to tune in and watch this one on YouTube, because I have a lot of show and tell stuff. So
first and foremost, they should be tuning in to every episode, watching every episode on YouTube. But, you know, please go ahead.
I mean, absolutely, right? You never know what you're going to see. So, about a week ago, maybe a little longer ago than that, I got a real good friend of mine who, he's a combat medic, who's an active reservist stationed in Germany right now. He's in Ramstein. And he's just been traveling Europe, right? Just really enjoying the time he's got over there and the amount of time that he's got off, I guess, away from duty, really making the most of this deployment. So he sent me a message. He said, hey, dude, I'm sending you a package, but when it gets there, you know, give me a call through Instagram or whatever. So he said, I got some things to explain. And I was like, oh, okay. Now, he's already sent one care package before, and it's been with, you know, cookies and chocolates from different countries in Europe and just stuff for the kids and Tammy and everything, which was really cool. I mean, he's the guy that's overseas and he's sending me care packages. Like, what a guy, right? So get this other package, and it's real tight. It's just compact with, again, tins from Belgian wafers and chocolates from France and Germany and all cookies and all these sweets, package of cookies from Poland, and it's this amazing stuff. Then kind of down below all the tasty treats and goodies.
You need to find out what his favorite regional potato – well, I guess he could get any of that on Amazon. I was going to say, you need to find out what his like favorite regional potato chips that he can't get overseas and like hook them up.
I keep asking him. I mean, he's going on the Band of Brothers tour with me. He already bought a ticket. I'm like, dude, I'll bring you something. He's like, I'm good. I don't need anything. Okay. I mean, obviously, I'm going to bring him something. But, yeah, down under all these treats was, like, the real good stuff. So I'm pulling all this stuff out, and there's packets of papers and everything. Okay, this is probably why I need to call him. So I did. And he goes, okay, you know, first things first. And I'm just going to kind of show you guys as I'm talking about it. But about a 6 to 8 inch length of old rusty barbed wire. And, you know, you can imagine, okay, what World War I battlefield did this come off of is what I was first thinking. And you're absolutely right. He said, this is the wire from Verdun around the American defenses. Yeah.
Now, for the listening audience, are you kind of surprised at the lack amount of rust on that for how old it is?
It's actually not bad. I mean, I think part of it, I don't know if it was down in the ground. I you know, he didn't really go into that. But you're right. I mean, I think it's probably the quality of steel maybe or something. But, I mean, it's still pretty durable. I mean, I'm not afraid to give it a little flex. You know, I mean, some of the stuff you see, it just kind of like snaps. You know, that's it. So really cool there, you know, some World War One history.
That's a type of artifact you got to put a disclaimer on your display. No touchy, it pokey.
Right, exactly. then there was a Ziploc bag with a little piece of paper and a map of what Stalagluft 3 looked like, where all the buildings were, and the hospital. There was a coal store, and then the cooler, right? And, of course, if anybody's seen The Great Escape, you can picture Steve McQueen, the cooler king, right? He was always getting sent to the cooler, and he's sitting in there with his old ball and he's bouncing the baseball off the wall in the cooler. This is a big rock, chunk of concrete that came from the cooler on Stalagluft 3. So I can only imagine what this wall, you know, what this rock saw, and how many of those guys were, you know, put in there for days on end. It's surprisingly light. It's like, it's almost like
when you're holding it up to the camera, it looked like a small chunk, but as you rotate it away and we can see the size in contrast with your fingers, you realize it's a pretty good chunk. I'd say it's about the size of a playing card, a little bit bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. About that. Maybe not quite as long.
As thick as the entire deck.
Yeah, about the size of the thickness of a deck of cards. You're right. That's a pretty good analogy. Yeah, and there's one side that's much darker than the other, so I'm assuming that darker side was probably what was exposed on the inside of the cooler there. It's got some black mark on it. I really tried to look to see if there was any kind of etching or tally marks or anything. You know, I didn't really see anything on there. So, you know, that was just like, wow, this is really cool, dude. Then the really good stuff showed up, right? And so as I'm talking through this, he says, okay, you pull this packet out. I'm like, okay. So there was this big packet, and he's got some color pictures. And what he did was he sent me samples of soil from 18 different battlefields.
And then a bunch of blank documents said, fill out these soil reports so I can submit them at work and get my job done.
Right. So the packet goes along with the order. So there's a vial mark number one, a vial mark number two. So he said, if you stack one on top of two and start at the top, that's the order of how it appears in the packet. And this is all stuff he did on his own, right? Not only does he give me
he collect all this stuff, but he spends like 3.5 weeks of his own personal time cataloging and distributing it to you.
Oh, I know. I mean, this guy's incredible. So, yeah, not only does he give you a little, like, synopsis of the battle, he goes, you know, just in case there were some, he said, there was places I'd never really heard of. So I said, I gave you a little synopsis of the battle. I gave you a YouTube link. But to me, I thought the coolest thing was he gave me GPS coordinates.
Oh, that's sweet.
To exactly where the sample came from. So he said, you can look at that. If you want to look at a map of the battle and see exactly where this dirt come from. So just to give you an example, I'm not going to read all of these, but to give you an example of some of these places. So Belleau Wood, right? Every Marine just perked up. Battle of Arcourt, Lorraine campaign, Herdgen Forest. Let's see, Bastogne. Of course, the Blazjak and what was a shell hole or a foxhole. Fight at the Crossroads. We know the Crossroads pretty well if you've seen Band of Brothers. Let's see, Blue Beach, Dieppe. My gosh, I mean, it just goes on and on. There was one, I can't remember where it was. There's a Battle for Hill 223, Sergeant Alvin York. I want to say there was one from the Gaelic Wars, too. Here we go. Battle of Alesia, September 52 BC, 12 Roman legions with cavalry and auxiliaries. This soil is from the site of a failed final charge against Caesar's ring of fortifications from 52 BC. So, you know, this guy, I've known him for years now. We met reenacting, and he's just always just bent over backwards. He's a heck of a reenactor. But let me tell you, like, I wish everybody had a friend like I have a friend in
Staff
Sergeant
Purs. I ain't got no dirt.
Man, I mean, what a guy. What a guy to send me all of this. So I wanted to give him a shout out. Like I said, he's serving this great nation in uniform in Germany. And while he may not have the most stressful time over there, it looks like he's certainly making the most of his time. And he literally sent me a message, said, whatever you need for content for What's the Scuttlebutt. If he said, look, I've been to these places so many times.
Awesome.
If you've got a listener that's wanting to travel, he said, I am at your disposal. I can tell you all the best places to eat, where to stay, where to go, and how not to waste your time navigating through Europe and all these battlefields in history. So,
well, this would be a nice little segue. We didn't really mention it at the top of the show for the guys watching on YouTube and those of you listening to this show tomorrow. Stick around for part two. Me and Henry sat down with Saul David, but the ring is that I bring this up, and I'm kind of embarrassed to admit this as an IT guy. Maybe it's because I'm so burnt out on computers when I get home and I want nothing to do with them. But Henry was explaining to me, and this is so simple, but I feel so dumb that I never crossed my mind to do this. And this would be great for your coordinates. He gave you the coordinates for your dirt. Henry's like, yeah, when I read these books, I just go on Google Maps and look at the battlefields. I'm like, I never thought of that. So it'd be perfect. Like, you could put those coordinates on Google Maps and zoom in and see exactly what the area looks like.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, man. I mean, Herdgen Forest. Herdgen Forest is one of my favorite battles of Europe. I haven't read anything on it this past winter, but I wanted to hear more about your soil from Herdgen Forest. I'd like to know exactly where it was.
Yeah,
but I don't want to interrupt what Don was saying. I mean,
well,
but,
no, we're going to get back to the soil here in a minute. And as we're talking about later on, is a lot of these battlefields have now been, developed. But even the ones that haven't, if they have a good road going through it, you can get down at the road level with thanks to the Google car and actually
street view
and spin around 360. So Jeff should definitely do that with his soil reports. Out of all those soils he sent you, which one, like, got the hair standing up on you a little bit more than the others? Obviously, you're excited about all of them, but every collection, even a micro collection, there's got to be a favorite of the group.
Yeah, I mean, it was really not a Marine, but I mean, Belleau Wood.
Yeah,
that's pretty amazing to see that. And I'll be honest, I think the sands from Dunkirk really impressed me because you can actually see little bits of seashells down in there. You can kind of spin these vials sideways and really kind of get a good surface area to see what's inside of them. And it's really interesting. Well, it's going to be hard to tell on this camera, but it's really interesting to see the colors, the grains. I mean, there's whites, tans, oranges, browns, you know, burnt yellow color.
You should take
black.
Those to work it's... and head down to the science department, throw some of those on a slide, look under a microscope, check them out.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, anyway, heck of a dude. Just thanks a lot, buddy. I'm going to see you here in a couple months. So, that was a really cool surprise. It came at the beginning of my spring break, and then the end of my spring break, which we just celebrated this past week. We have an early spring break here in Texas. The air show, 31st annual air show. It was the first air show in the 2023 season. And, you know, so we're kind of used to that. We kick off the air show season, you know, in the U.S. But it was also the first one since the fateful air show.
Oh, yes.
At Wings over Dallas. And
especially the home state.
Yeah. You know, we, for being a small, you know, smaller hangar, smaller museum, smaller squadron, the pressure was really on, and the microscope was really zooming in on us. And there was a time less than 2 weeks before the air show started where we were not approved by FAA to have an air show. And we really started scrambling through a 1,000-page document to make sure that this waiver could get approved. And the emergency safety plan was put into effect. And all day Friday, we're running scenarios with EMS, fire, police, running down the runway, sirens on, you know, I mean, the whole drill. And when all was said and done, the FAA, of course, they were there. Inspectors were there through the whole pilot briefing, all the way through the end of the show. And they said, we have set the bar for air shows now, which was just such a huge pat on the back. Early attendance numbers, and who cares about that, right? If you had 1 8-year-old kid that loves airplanes and come, that's a success, right? But, you know, when you look at the attendance, it was the second highest ever attendance. It was going to be hard to break last year's record. But last year it was like 75 degrees and perfection. This year was 52 degrees, but it started off in the high 30s, overcast. You know, not the best day to stand outside.
No, but as somebody wearing wool and a leather jacket, you're like, it's beautiful out.
I know. Yeah, it's perfect for us, right? Living history. I said the same thing. Like, man, I'll be fine in my A2.
Yeah.
But, you know, with that said, for folks who may not realize this, we have a lot of the stunt aircraft, too. It's not just old World War II warbirds flying left to right. We have a lot of those stunts that are they got the smoke generators on, and they're doing hammerheads and triple snap rolls and everything. And cooler, thinner air definitely helps the aircraft perform a lot better than if it was 100 degrees and humid. So from that perspective, and of course, overcast skies, but a high ceiling, like 7,500 feet, something like that. So it's a perfect white backdrop for every picture taken in the air, you know, no direct sunlight for us. So that part was a success. And, you know, to be able to, I had time to take one picture, right? Because, you know, I'm running all the ground acts and everything else. But I got to take a picture with one of my favorite World War II veterans that I've ever met, Colonel Joe McPhail. He flew with VMF 323 off Okinawa, flew Corsairs. I know Henry's digging that. VMF 323, which they were called the Death Rattlers.
Okinawa, man, I love the Death Rattlers.
And then flew in
heavy
Korea.
Okinawa.
Right, right. Yeah, and then flew in Korea, combat in Korea with none other than VMF 214. Baba Black Sheep in Korea. So, yeah, he also flew Wildcats and the F-9s. So, just a heck of a guy. If y'all go on Instagram and see the picture of him and I, the man looks great. We're joking around. He always remembers me. He's 102 years old, and he's coming from 5 hours away. And just to talk to him and his son was telling me, guys, this is incredible. They are putting a huge dedication to Colonel McPhail together.
Nice.
At the Oshkosh Air Show. I think it's the last weekend in July, right? Largest air show in the world, Oshkosh, Wisconsin. They have 18 airworthy Corsairs flying in from all over the place.
Could you imagine the sound of that waving over your head?
When is that going to be?
I think it's the last weekend in July. Jeez. You just look up the Oshkosh Air Show. Like I said, it's the largest one in the country. I think in one air show they had about 10,000 aircraft there at one time.
Hey, is there any? Could I get one of those photos you've got of him? I mean, I know he couldn't sign it, but I'd love to get that photograph of him standing there in his flight gear. Is there any way I can get one of those?
I'll email him. I'll get.
I mean,
that.
If I got a, you know, if there's a too, cost cool. or something like that, let me know what it is. I mean, I'm not gonna get crazy or anything, but
right. No, don't worry about that. We'll take care of that. Yeah, I wish I'd have known a couple days sooner. I'd have grabbed another one. I actually got this a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And so I just have the one that's usually hanging on the wall. But this time I was like, okay, you know what? I've got a couple books about Corsairs. My dad has a nice book about Corsairs. I said, hey, can you sign a couple pages in here too? you know, not
I
just
like
the
that picture, man.
Yeah, it's a great shot of him on Oki. Heck of a guy. Then, and I got one more thing I really wanted to talk about. And this one really is going to take the cake because I don't think you guys even know about this yet. So y'all know I had this buddy in Japan,
mm-hmm.
who he's a reenactor, but he does a lot of other things, works for the government over there. He comes to America every year. He hasn't been able to since COVID started. So it's been a few years since I've seen him. And we talk, I'd probably say weekly. You know, Facebook Messenger is a great thing when you have a 12-hour time difference, whatever.
Absolutely.
Japan is from here, right? So it's cool. We get to stay in touch and share ideas back and forth. Well, he came over with one of his other two of his other colleagues, I should say. And to see Yoshiro in this little museum in Burnett, Texas was just like amazing, right? And he came early enough, came about 2 hours before the air show started. Gates were open to the public, but we're just kind of milling around. 40s music's playing. You know, we're just the whole setting up thing. Airplanes are coming in, getting ready. So I had a little bit of time to visit with him. And he said, hey, he said, you know, I have something for you. And I said, oh, you're sure you don't have to do that? He goes, no. And so he said, look, and I don't have this written down yet, so I may misspeak, but this is how I understood the story. The Sasebo Naval Base. Like, I think you guys have probably heard of Sasebo.
Yeah.
Okay. Their flags that flew at like Kure and Sasebo, he mm-hmm. said the flags that flew there were of a different material than probably the flags that flew on just some of the islands that the grunts would put up, right? You know, they didn't have the resources that we had.
So were they a thicker canvas?
Yeah, I think they were thicker, probably more durable, maybe put some more time into the embroidery, whatever it was. But so, like I said, I had a little bit of a hard time understanding, but that's from what I gathered. So all of the veterans from Sasebo are no longer around. And there was a woman who was kind of the curator for this artifact. You know, was very specific as to where this artifact was going to end up. And Yoshiro says, I have somebody, you know, in America that I would like to present it to. Man, I'm sorry. It's just overwhelming to be given this. And I'll share pictures and, like I said, and a story when I get it. But here you go. The way I understand it, this flew over Sasebo during World War II.
Wow. And for those of you listening, this is not an American flag. It's obviously the Japanese Rising Sun flag. That's beautiful. You don't see a lot of those. Most of the Japanese flags you see is just the red ball in the middle. You don't see a whole lot of Rising Sun flags. So that's even cooler. That's beautiful. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, I just so.
So,
I mean,
what's your thinking on display? You going to do shadow box, full frame glass?
Yeah, absolutely.
Completely
and
open?
I told him that. I said, Yoshiro, I said, you need to send me everything you just told me, so I can build a proper display. Because, like I said, the way I understood it, this was the one that